WGXC.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. The local weather reports, public meetings, and other...
This is the Minneapolis Police. The party is over. If you all just grab your stuff and leave, there won't be any hassle. The party's been closed. The party is over with. Grab your stuff and go, and then nobody goes to jail.
Hello, I'm Neil Allen from Hudson, New York. You're listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
Tune in on
Hello, this
Wednesday,
is Cleo,
December 18th,
and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA.
Impeachment of the President of the United States and vote on two articles of impeachment. WGXC will carry as much of the debate and the vote live on the radio as possible. Tune in to 90.7 FM as the U.S. House of Representatives debate and vote on two articles of impeachment on Wednesday, December 18th on the radio at 90.7 FM WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carol Friedman of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Though he seemed loyal in public, he worked behind the scenes to stir up, arouse, incite revolution.
Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acre 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Usually at this point, we would introduce our guest. However, given today marks the end of our sixth year, we want to take the opportunity to reflect on some of the best moments from 2019.
You are about to hear excerpts from shows with Nicole Porter, Lauren Beale, Amanda Marie Freeman, Washington Irving, Ryan Bosch, Carol Hobson, Jim Hobson, and Reggie Wilcox.
These are some of our favorite moments, and we hope that you enjoy listening to them as much as we do. Now, your next item, Jim, is, well, I'm going to kind of group it together as hiking gear.
The most important bit of gear. If you're not going to have comfortable feet during any hike, no matter where you go, from Grand Canyon to Mount Mercy, or anywhere in the Catskills, you're not going to have a good experience without good, comfortable footwear.
Mike has always emphasized that with good socks as well.
Good socks.
Yes.
And good boots, and making sure that the boots fit your feet well. And
they have to be broken in.
Broken in, that's it.
Yes.
What's your breaking procedure, Jim?
What's your breaking procedure, Jim?
Well, my breaking in procedure, more or less, is going for a long walk, generally around Dalgeville, my hometown,
yeah,
with my wife in new boots, and yeah, that stretches them out a little bit. And then I'm ready to dive right in.
So it's not like some major, weird, complicated thing. It's just go for a walk, go for walks, and they'll be fine.
Yep, slowly break them in. Or I do have Carol take a couple of spoons and pull them apart.
You don't wear them to bed or anything?
What's that?
You don't wear them to bed or anything?
No.
Your next item, Nicole, is hiking boots. Why hiking boots?
Oh, well, they're one of my favorite things in the world. If I were to have to take one material possession with me I would bring these hiking boots. They're my favorite. My dad found them for me when I was in college, I think, and they were $25 on sale.
Wow.
And they're Merrells with Vibram soles. You can't beat them. And they've gone lots of places with me.
So it's the same boots?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So how old are they then?
Probably over 10, 12 years maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. Starting to see a little bit of wear, though. I need to, I think, take them into the boot doctor.
I was going
to
say, can you get them fixed?
Yeah, the top of the toe, you know, where the Vibram sole comes over to meet the front of the boot, it's getting a little bit pulled back, so I should probably fix that before it gets worse.
Yeah. Nicole, did you say that these boots trekked you through Iceland when you went?
They did.
Yeah, so you backpacked through Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that trip.
Oh, it was great. One of my friends planned the whole trip, which made it really enjoyable for me. I just kind of got on the plane and went. But we traveled through the main part of the country, kind of in the central section, and there's a trail. I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like Lagamunder. I don't know. And it's this 100-kilometer trail, about 60 miles, that we hiked in 5 days. And when we even landed in Iceland, in Reykjavik, in this capital, I felt like we were on a different planet. It looked like you were on the moon or something. Just the geography was like nothing I'd seen before. And every day of our trip, it looked like a totally different environment. One night we slept outside near a glacial lake, and the lake water was just this turquoise color. It was amazing, but kind of in a crater almost. And one night we backpacked and went up kind of into a cliff and camped in a cave. And we had to cross rivers and streams, and we hiked across a glacier at one point. So it was just, yeah, it was a remarkable trip.
Was there any scary points where, you know, like, don't walk down there in case you maybe get into, you know, these crevasses and stuff?
Sure.
Like that?
Yeah, I was a little bit nervous going into it, not knowing what to expect, but there wasn't really a whole lot of tricky parts. I think one day we had a little bit of scrambling we had to do going up kind of the side of a mountain, but it didn't last for very long. But
a friend, a colleague of mine in my job, she went to Iceland. She loved it. The first day she got there, they were actually going somewhere straight from the airport, and they get stranded for 24 hours.
Oh, no.
Because there was a sudden snowstorm came in or something. But my nephew, who's an actor, he actually went there to film an advert, and he said it was absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. He said he loved it.
Yeah, I think with social media, maybe people have discovered it, that it's, you know, this great, it's only 4-hour flight in the air, and you can be there the same day and just have this great place to explore.
Yeah.
So it's, I think, becoming a more popular place to go.
Yeah.
But I'd love to go back.
One day I would love to see the Northern Lights from Canada or Iceland or somewhere. But I've heard that I think Iceland is a good place.
People say it's something to behold, you know, special, beautiful.
Yeah, I had a friend who specifically planned a trip around that. He went, I think it was last summer, maybe. And he and his wife kind of climbed up a little side of a glacier or something, and they had a tour, and it brought them right to these lights. And, and pictures don't do it justice, I don't think.
Now, in case any listeners are wondering, we had been talking about hiking boots. And if you're in the market for some hiking boots, according to REI, the retailer in outdoor equipment, hiking boots should fit snug everywhere, tight nowhere, and offer room to wiggle your toes. Try them on at the end of the day after your feet have swollen and with the socks you plan to wear. Know your size, and it's best to have your foot's length, width, and arch length measured on a specially calibrated fit device at the outdoors retailer, maybe an EMS or a Dixa or an REI or wherever they might have that sort of thing. And interestingly, I found that on the Appalachian Trail, most people wear trail runners for a majority of the journey. So a lot of people don't even wear real legit hiking boots on the Appalachian Trail. They're running trail runners or sneakers or something like that.
Yeah, I think you said that once before when we were interviewing Jay.
And that really blew me away. I thought for sure it'd be hiking boots the whole way. But, you know, I think a lot of times your feet get saturated. And as awesome as hiking boots are, the support they provide, when they get wet, they're kind of hard to dry out. And trail runners, a little bit lower profile and not nearly as much ankle support, you know. Mm. So I just thought that was kind of neat.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I do. I have a pair of trail runners, but I just use them to run in. But I like the Vibram sole on my boot because it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable when I'm on open rock face, because I'm a bit of a chicken when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Lauren, you enjoy visiting numbers of countries.
I do.
So did you like that, Mike?
It was an excellent segue.
It was.
Very, very impressive.
Talking of segues, I'd like to try one of them. But anyway, so go. Tell us about your countries.
Well, so far I've been to Canada, Mexico, Ireland, England, France, Spain, Italy, Iceland twice, Denmark, and Portugal.
But you couldn't find time for Scotland, Andy.
I know, I see. I know.
Danced right around.
I know.
Right around Scotland.
And one of your favorite programs is a Scottish program as well.
That's true, yeah. So the 11th one, I'm excited. I'm actually going back to Ireland with one of my friends who has never been there, but we're planning on doing a day trip up to Northern Ireland, which I've never been to.
Now, you actually spent a semester in Ireland, didn't
you? I did.
So whereabouts did you spend that?
I studied in Galway, which is on the west coast, which I'm very excited to go back to. It's a very pretty European city. It doesn't have like the big feel of Dublin. It's very artsy and kind of quaint.
Yeah, I've been there once and I liked it. It was really, really nice.
I've never been to Europe. I need to make the trip.
Yeah, you need to do that, Mike. You need to get over there and expand your horizons.
I do.
See some of this European architecture, so crucial to European history.
Yeah.
So you can expand your kids' knowledge in school.
That's true. That's a good point.
I would highly recommend against going to Iceland this time of year.
No.
I've made that mistake twice.
Yeah, tell us what happened.
Well, last year when I went, we were supposed to just have like a, I think it was originally supposed to be about an 8-hour layover.
Yeah.
On our way to Denmark.
Not an 8-day layover, as it turned out.
Yeah, it turned out to be more of a like 48-hour layover.
Oh.
Because they had a massive blizzard and we got stranded.
In Iceland.
In Iceland, which it was miraculous. We got literally the last available lodging I could find anywhere within distance of the airport. But it was an adventure.
How did you get from the airport to the lodging?
Eventually, the buses started running because they had, by the time we got to the airport, they actually shut down all of the buses between the city and the airport. Everything was shut down, essentially, on the island. So by the time we had gotten the lodgings, they started the buses back up and we were able to get downtown.
Right.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen in your travels the Northern Lights?
That's another funny story. My friend and I, when I went to Iceland the first time, we did a trip up into the mountains, a bus tour, that was supposed to let us see the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
So they took us out on
this... The bus was meant to let you see the Northern Lights?
Well, the tour was meant to...
Oh, the tour, right.
To show you the Northern Lights.
It was a crazy bus.
Well, we're going to shine the lights toward the north from the bus. Lookied.
Is that how they speak? Is that how they speak in Iceland?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was just the headlights on the snow. But no, so they took us about an hour away from the city into the mountains, and it's incredibly rural there. Like, once you're outside of the city, there's nothing except for volcanoes and mountains. So they brought us up into the mountains, and we got to go outside for about a minute. The Northern Lights were there, but they were very, very faint. It was just like a tiny green spot in the sky. So we went back onto the bus, we were waiting, and it was freezing cold. This was in March, so everything was icy and snowy. And the bus died.
Oh, no. The bus died while we were up there. Oh, my gosh, that's, like, really dangerous.
It's really dangerous, and apparently this had happened before, and they don't bring jumper cables with them. And there were all these other buses around, but they couldn't do anything. So they just sent someone back to the city to send someone back to get help. So it took almost 2 hours for someone to get to us. And there was ice forming inside of the windows. It was a very stressful...
I bet you were freezing.
Terrifying. We were freezing, yeah.
Why didn't they put all of you in the other buses?
That's what I was wondering too. And our bus driver tried to keep us entertained for a while, but...
Was he singing songs and stuff?
He was trying to tell us stories, but then he just gave up entirely. And there was this one younger man on the bus who I think had autism, and he was kind of saying what we all wanted to be saying. And just was like, when are we going home? When are we getting off the bus? And the driver just gave up trying to, like, entertain us. But the worst part was when we got back, I mean, we had booked tour after tour, so we had another tour in the morning. We didn't get back to our hotel till like 2 a.m. And we were asking the driver, you know, are we going to get a refund for this? And he was like, well, no, we don't, you know, we don't give out refunds, but we'll give you another tour voucher. So the next time you're in Iceland, you can come with us.
Now, when you say mastering Segway, do you mean that we are going to be on Segway machines and going down the street?
That's after the radio show. During the radio show, I'm talking about natural transitions from one topic to the next that are seamless and entertaining to the listener.
Yeah, you seem to be a professional at that, Mike.
Yeah, but then we'll work on our balance on the Segway machines that await us outside.
I've never ridden a Segway. I didn't know you had one.
Well,
I'm
you know,
excited.
I wanted to ride one when myself and Julia, my girlfriend, we actually went to Florida to visit her mum. Sorry, yeah, went to Florida to visit her dad and sister and partners. I wanted to go on a Segway tour, or no tour, but
okay,
hour.
A cruise,
yeah, and a wheelabout, and. Nobody else wanted to do it because it was like $70 for an hour or something.
Ah, yeah.
So we never did it.
I've never done it because it's to me it's like the equivalent of riding like a two-person bicycle. Like it just looks too goofy.
The person at the back's always like skiving off.
Yeah.
If I was the guy in the front, I would like punish that person by farting or something.
Good heavens, man!
Yeah, why not?
I see them. I see people on them, and I'm like. Man, you both were like, yeah, high five, let's do this.
What are we talking about? I wasn't paying attention.
Went from Segways to dual bikes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, they're actually, they're pretty great.
Have you tried them?
I've tried it a little bit.
Were you at the front or the back?
I was in the back.
So were you like slacking off?
Yeah. Did you
smell anything odd?
No, not usually. Well, you know, I went on, I just tried it briefly with my wife. My in-laws have a tandem bike, and they really love the thing. They go everywhere on it.
Right. Can you testify to that?
I can testify to that. I can testify to, there was one incident that's funny. I don't know if I should talk about it, but they were riding someplace.
Is this going to have to be edited?
It might have to be, but I guess the story goes.
my favorite kind of radio show.
My mother and father-in-law, and they're Tom and Jeanette, and they're biking, and they're both very, very athletic. And Tom in particular, I mean, he bikes just about every day on his...
Singular bike.
Yeah, what is it called? Stationary. It's like a spin bike.
His Penny Farthing?
A velocipede. Step aside, sir. No, on a spin bike. So he bikes
on cobbled roads.
Very, very fit. And they had been going for miles, and suddenly Jeanette got a call. And so she gets this phone call, and she's talking and talking and talking, and she has stopped pedaling. And then she says, honey, I'm sorry, I can't hear you over your father's breathing. Just a second. So that's how the story has been relayed to me.
I would take umbrage to that.
I don't know. I cannot testify as to its accuracy. It's hearsay.
So tell us about this brewery obsession.
I love checking out local Hudson Valley places. So I've made it my goal to visit all of the breweries and wineries, distilleries, everything we have in the Hudson Valley. And I'm pretty far on that list. I would say I've visited at least a third of them so far.
So how many are there, do you know, roughly?
I would say there's into the hundreds. I would say maybe around 150.
Now, when you go there, are you taking notes? So maybe you can write a wee book.
That would be good. I should do that.
Yeah, but I would start taking notes and, you know, your experience so that you can, you know, because there's always books about different things and, you know, try this hiking, you know, hiking place and try this coffee house and...
Years ago, my parents came down, and we went to the Vanderbilt Mansion in Hyde Park. And afterward, we went to some restaurant that had a catfish po' boy, and it was like right around the corner from the Vanderbilt Mansion. And I can't remember what the restaurant was called, but it was good. It was really good. Yeah. So
what did you say? A po' boy?
A po' boy, which is like a Cajun kind of a sub sandwich. I guess you could kind of describe it.
Never heard of that.
It was right by Vanderbilt.
On that road, there's kind of like, I think, a main strip that runs up and down. I can't remember what it is.
I know there's a couple of, there's a diner there and an old-fashioned roller place. You can still go rollerblading there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that always scared me.
Knowing the diner, the building behind the diner.
Yeah. You know, I played hockey when I was a kid. And ice skating, you always have some level of control. You can stop. But I just feel like rollerblades, what can you do? You know, you can't grind the rubber into the road to stop. Did you ever?
No, but there's a stopper at the front.
Yeah, but what is that? If you're really cruising along, that's not going to work, you know?
I can't believe we're talking about rollerblading. I really can't.
Hey, it was a pastime of kids back in the 90s. Lauren, did you have rollerblades?
I did have rollerblades. I remember going up and down my driveway, and we went to Roller Magic. Hold on,
what's the difference between rollerblades and roller skates?
Roller skates have the four wheels, two in the front, two in the back.
You seem to be an aficionado here.
Well, I never got to try roller skating.
Ah, see, when I was talking to you about that there, I was thinking the four-wheel thing.
Oh,
yeah, no, roller skates.
Yeah.
And those, I think, yeah, so you're, what was that movie with John Travolta where they were skating? Wasn't that a thing?
Staying Alive?
No, I don't know.
Saturday Night Fever?
Saturday Night Fever, I think, yeah.
I don't think they were skating,
You know, they're not, you're in a circle, that's a little bit more controlled. But I'm talking like people that used to go on rollerblades for exercise, and they'd be flying down the road. And
well, you see people doing that on the walkway.
Mm-hmm. On rollerblades?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
See, that to me just seems so dangerous.
Yeah. See, I've never done it. I must have congenitally weak ankles or something.
Or arms.
Yeah. Yeah, look.
There was an incident years ago, if I remember, on the soccer field.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. But actually, I'm actually still lifting weights, which it's not giving me any problems.
Well, it's slightly.
I'm pointing at my arm now.
It's a little misshapen.
Yeah.
I don't know what that sixth finger is all about. But.
Dear.
The other day I was talking about is my Uncle Ben. My Uncle Ben was down in South Carolina, and I guess about when I was 9 years old, he took me up in a crop duster, and I don't know if you know about a crop duster. That's a two wings with the
well,
wires.
Hopefully it's two wings. Hopefully it's not just one wing. You're not going to get up any far.
Two wings, and we had an open cockpit. There was one up front and one in the back, and right. My Uncle Ben had a hair lip, and he would say, "Are you okay?" And I'd get in the seat, and I'd shake my head because he couldn't hear me, but I could hear him because he was shouting back to me. Because I was way down behind him, and he cinched me in and strapped me in, and he said, "Would you like to go for a ride?" And I said, "Sure." So up we went. And the funny thing about it was my Uncle Ben, this was before World War II, you know. This is when it was maybe in the wind. Anyway, we're flying up there, and he says, "You sick yet?" And I said, "No," shaking my head. And he'd look back at me, and he'd say, "You sick yet?" And I said, "No," shaking my head. In which case, we did a stall. And you know, at 9 years old, when the stall happens, the propeller stops.
Yeah.
And so the engine stopped, and with a big whoosh, we went down towards the ground, and I didn't know what was going on. And he yelled back at me, "Are you sick yet?" Wasn't sick. But that was my introduction to flying.
No, I would never have done that in my life. Not a chance.
Let me tell you, it's a thrill and a half. We went over to the farmhouse, and he said, "Want to say hello to your mom?" And I said, "Well, okay." We turned upside down, and I hung on a strap on my legs, and I'm waving to my mother down on the farm roof, 100 feet up above the farmhouse roof.
Wow.
Upside down.
What an incredible.
In a crop duster aircraft. So it was a lot of...
Sounds more like a crap duster.
and that's why you actually have a model biplane from your Uncle Ben.
Yeah, I do.
Maybe take that with you and some cool sentimental value. And did you ever think about getting into piloting?
Well, Uncle Ben told me one time, he said, "You want to hold a stick?" And I held the stick, and it was kind of interesting.
What, the stick to control the plane, you mean?
That's correct.
And did you actually control the plane at that point?
I actually controlled the plane, yes.
Wow.
It was a lot of fun. And my Uncle Ben was something else. He was a salvage kind of guy. He would go out to an airport where a plane cracked up, and he'd fix it up. And he was doing this when he started about 16, 17, rebuilding aircraft. He went in the Army and enlisted in the Air Force. And when he went to the Air Force thing, they standing out there in the field, and they said, "Ben Carroll, front and center." And he, "Yes, sir." He said, "You know how to fly that aircraft?" And, "Yes, sir." And he went out and got right in a trainer, and he went up and flew it upside down over the field. And when he came back, he did a spiral down and landed. They said, "You can fly." And wow. Uncle Ben said, yep, he could.
Wow.
Interesting background. Trouble was he couldn't get a light. He wouldn't give him his wings because he had this hair lip. And the hair lip made him difficult to understand on the intercom. But what they did do is they operated on him, fixed that, and they gave him a bombardier classification. And he flew in the B-17s over Germany.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
So that was my Uncle Ben.
A great end to that story.
But he's the one that got me into the flying aspect of that, and that kind of got me motivated. But, you know, Uncle Ben was also an outdoorsman. He was an avid hunter, and he did a lot of things when he was really a guy of all kinds of trades. Big thing, though, was flying and rebuilding aircraft.
Now, he obviously means a lot to you. You're obviously sharing some of your memories of him. Now, did you ever get him back? Did you ever take him on the boats?
Did I ever what?
Did you ever return the favor, take him on the boat?
No, we never got a chance to do that, unfortunately.
Ah.
No, I wish we had, and we lost Uncle Ben, but I wish we had. I wish he were around right now, because we had an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Scared the heck out of me a couple of times. I never got sick. We did everything.
You ever get sick yet?
No, I didn't get sick. Did you ever try a falling leaf in an airplane?
I don't know what that is.
A falling leaf is you're sliding side to side, and then you come down, and you kind of think you're going to be hitting the ground one way to the right or one way to the left, and then you pull it out, and you foot full throttle, and you're back up again into the clouds. It was kind of fun.
Not for me.
Yeah, that sounds pretty terrifying.
Yeah, not for me.
I would be sick.
I enjoy too much my time sitting in a soft chair in a coffee house.
You're not ready for that yet. You've got many years ahead of you.
That was Mountaintop by Reliant Robin. I mean, Reliant K. I really liked that. I had my toe tapping with that. Man. I really enjoyed that. It was a really good song.
Your toe wouldn't be tapping at 3 a.m. when that's the alarm set to get up to go to the airport.
Oops.
The beginning of the song is quite bah, you know, and if that's what you're hearing, Mike, when you wake up, the alarm, I can understand why you would have some angst with that song.
I have some Adirondack trivia for you guys here, if you're interested, if you're ready.
Oh, boy.
Can you name the tallest peak in New York State?
I think so.
Andy, you want to take a stab at it?
I don't know.
Is it Mount Marcy?
The answer is Mount Marcy. And that tops out at 5,344 feet tall. Tallest point in New York State. Mount Marcy in the Adirondacks.
And that's what I have done basically since retiring has been going to the mountains almost 2-3 times a week.
So can I ask, does that feeling get old at all at any point when you reach that summit and
Never.
You just look out and just see whatever you see, the majesty of what you see?
Yes, it never gets old. Every mountain that I do, I feel that it is a new awakening that I have on each different summit. And even if I do a mountain a second time, I'll find a new way of doing it. Andy, I do a lot of bushwhacking, which is off-trail hiking. So that really gets me in touch with nature, because there you're not following any trail. You're using a map, a compass, and maybe a GPS to guide your way. And in most cases, I feel kind of like a modern-day Davy Crockett or Daniel Boone when I go into the woods, because I'm going on to areas that maybe no human footstep has ever hit before, ever
touched
before.
Isn't that incredible? I thought it'd be a cool premise for a book to be like the perspective of a rock in the woods over the course of history. So, you know, like they see Native American tribes walk by, and then they see British soldiers walk by, and then they see people hiking.
Yeah,
And you know, but like you're saying, there may be parts of the Adirondacks
and Catskills.
Bushwhacking in the Catskills where no one has ever been. That's
exactly.
You know, that's that could be.
Have you ever encountered danger or been ever like scared that I might be lost here? Or
yes, as a matter of fact, in both mountain ranges, the Adirondacks and Catskills. In the Catskills, before I became proficient with the compass and map, I was on a mountain called Irish Mountain, which is near the community of Grand Gorge.
Oh, yeah.
You've probably been through there at different times. Beautiful little town. Anyway, once I had gotten up to the summit, where I had no trouble finding the summit, a massive snow squall came in, and whiteout conditions. I couldn't see where my footsteps had been, my earlier footsteps on my way up there. And I ended up going the wrong way down the mountain.
Oh, my gosh.
Heading into away from where I was parked. And, yeah, that was a little scary. Up in the Adirondacks, I had a situation where evidently I hadn't given myself enough time. I'd started a little bit later in the day, and this was on Kilburn Mountain. I ended up coming out on a bushwhack, no trail, in the dark. I had 1 foot in a swamp and 1 foot in a really thick spruce thicket of trees. And I didn't know if I was going to make it out.
Oh, my gosh.
And no cell phone coverage up there, and little or none in the Catskills as well. And, yeah, that is it.
So what did you do?
Stopped, took a deep breath, got my compass out, put my headlamp on, and followed my compass. Trust your compass. And that's how I made it out. I eventually located. I could hear a car. This was the Adirondack Adventure on Kilburn Mountain. I could hear a car on one of the New York Route 86 about a half a mile away, and I felt like I was saved. At that point, the car showed that I was back in civilization again.
Right, right.
So that was probably one of the scarier moments that I've had.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What do you think is maybe, well, what is the highest peak in the Adirondacks? Do you know? I don't remember.
It's Mount Marcy. About 5,200 feet, roughly 5,400 feet, somewhere in that vicinity.
Yeah. You know, so there are times, that's the highest in the Adirondacks, and I think probably the highest point in New York State.
Yes.
On a landform. And so there are times where if you hike to the top of Mount Marcy, you are the highest human, freestanding human in the state.
Yes.
Incredible.
When you think about that, yeah, I never thought of that, actually. Yeah.
Yes, we were at the roof of New York State, a buddy of mine and I, Mike. We had climbed to the top of Mount Marcy. Our first time up in the morning, actually, we did it twice in the same day. We went up to Marcy, and then we're going to go over Marcy to Skylight, which is on the south side of the highest peak of New York State. And it was packed with people, and it was all fogged in, too. So we had double negatives. We weren't the only ones there,
yep.
A crowd, and it was no view because it was all fogged in. So we went over Marcy, down the deep col into towards Skylight. Then we went over and did Gray Peak. We came back to Marcy at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and bright sunshine, not a soul there. We had that peak to ourselves, and for that moment, I was the highest person in New York State.
Andy, you had some moon trivia.
I do have some moon trivia, yes.
All right, so what do you have for us?
Now, do you know that the moon is drifting away from the Earth constantly?
I did hear that, yeah.
But how much is it drifting away every year? So in distance, how far is the moon drifting away from the Earth every year? Would you like to take a guess, Amanda Marie?
I don't know. I feel like making a hand motion, and then when you tell me what the answer is, I can just like, that's what I said, because no one would know.
I'll give you a clue. I was moving my hands there.
Erratic moving of his hands, not very helpful.
Well, what I'm saying is it's no miles.
Yeah, yeah.
So have a guess.
I'm going to say 1 inch.
1 inch?
I'm going to say 2 inches? No idea.
3.8 centimeters.
Wow.
All right. So that may be between an inch or two, but 3 centimeters. I can't remember what the conversion is. Is it 2.54 centimeters per inch, I think it is?
I don't know.
I think that's what it may be.
Would she have stumbled on the correct answer?
I think so. I think she may have. I should do the conversion quick. But yeah, you know, I've heard that. And the incredible thing is there was a time in our history where the moon was just like right there. You know, if it's moving at that, I mean, a couple million years ago, you look up in the night sky and it's like, holy smokes. Reach out and touch the thing.
Well, did you know that the sun and the moon are not the same size?
I have heard that.
Right. From Earth, both the sun and the moon look the same size. This is because the moon is a particular amount times smaller than the sun, but also this same amount closer to the Earth.
And that is amazing. That in and of itself is like miraculous. That the sun, like, so for example, when there's a solar eclipse and the moon basically perfectly conceals the sun, the odds of that happening are like astronomically small. That right, the moon right. would be just the perfect size, just the perfect distance.
Okay, so how many times smaller is the moon to the sun? And it's also the same amount that it's closer to Earth.
I'm going to say 10,000 times. That's what stands out in my mind.
See, I have no idea because I'm sitting here thinking, like, I don't know, four times? So I have no idea.
The moon is 400 okay. times smaller okay. than the sun, but so also 400 times closer
yeah,
to Earth.
Okay. That's what it is, yeah.
So there you are.
Incredible. Yeah. Just incredible. Yeah, the last time there was an eclipse, I was hearing these things, but I forgot that.
Scale. And the moon always shows Earth the same face.
That's right. Yeah, we never right? see the dark side of the
never
moon.
Never see the dark side of the moon. The moon is in synchronous rotation with Earth. Its near side is dark, marked by dark, large plains, volcanic maria, that will fill the spaces between the bright ancient crustal highlands and the prominent impact craters. So there you are.
Cool.
So just some trivia of the moon.
All right.
Would you guys ever go to the moon if you had the opportunity?
I don't know.
Some space tourism, perhaps?
How can you say that? One of your favorite songs is Fly Me to the Moon.
That's true.
What about, okay, if not the moon, then what about Mars?
Jupiter?
Yeah. In other words.
Yeah. I think if, I'll be honest with you, I think I'd be really scared leaving.
Yeah.
You know, see, these people go on, you know, astronauts go on these spacecraft. I don't know how they find the nerve to do it. I think it would be, for a start, if you're an astronaut and you're out in space and you're in the space station and you're looking down at Earth as this little blue planet, right? Coming back to Earth must give you a philosophical dilemma about life.
Mm-hmm.
How would you feel? Because you've actually had an out-of-Earth experience.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
There is a photograph. I can't remember who the astronaut was, but he took a photograph of Earth. And in that photograph was every human who had ever lived up to the present, excluding himself. It's the ultimate anti-photo bomb. Because any human that's ever lived, at least their remains are here, you know, on the planet.
Well, do they know actually go to heaven?
Well, their souls, but not their remains.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's just incredible.
Well, do you think you could go to Mars or space?
I don't think I'd make the journey.
Mike, yeah. Do you? Do you know what I'd really like to do? I'd love to be able to feel weightlessness.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
If it was safe, you know.
Do I know why they never build, that nobody's ever built a bar? In the moon?
A bar?
Yeah.
Like for drinks?
Yeah.
Why?
Because apparently there would never be any atmosphere.
Boo.
Oh, dear. Do you know what the shortest verse in the Bible is?
I do. I don't know the reference point, but I know what it says.
What?
Jesus wept.
Well done. Impressive.
That's in Luke, yeah. But I don't know where in Luke.
Yeah.
What about the last word in the Bible?
I believe it's amen.
Wow. Yes. Lauren's a beast. Yes. Holy moly.
She is a beast.
Now, I have some Bible trivia for you folks if you're ready for it. The first question. How does Moses see God in the wilderness? Andy?
Very well. It was like.
sort of true.
What's the question again?
How does Moses see God in the wilderness?
I don't know.
Lauren?
Would that be in a burning bush?
As a burning bush, that's correct.
Oh, the burning ding, bush.
Ding, ding. Yeah, yeah, that's right. How many books are in the Bible?
Seven?
Oh, come on, man. Too late. That's your guess. Lauren, do you know?
Well, I'm still bad with number guessing. I'm just going to revert to the piano number and just throw out an 88, even though I know it's not true.
You know, you're close. It is a double number. Like, it's 66.
Oh, you see, said 66 earlier. I switched the piano and the Bible.
Yeah. And I have a few more trivia items, but I think we'll move on. But first, something that I was reminded of recently in Ken Burns' The Civil War, which Andy and I are tremendous fans of. Robert E. Lee, in April of 1865, surrendered on Palm Sunday, and Abraham Lincoln was killed that Friday, Good Friday.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I can't remember the exact date, but
poignant.
Incredible that, you know, Jesus riding in on the donkey, Palm Sunday, and in that way, you know, Robert E. Lee riding in on his horse to surrender, that kind of the same imagery.
Yep.
And then the kind of the savior of the Union, the savior of our souls, you know, being killed. Just incredible. You know, that's the kind of thing, if you were to try to write that in a book and give it to a publisher, I'm inclined that they'd be like,
yeah, come on.
Really? Same thing, you know, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, the only two presidents to sign the Declaration of Independence, both died on the 50th anniversary, July 4th, 1826, of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
Wow.
Yeah, and there again, like, wow.
I know.
Just unbelievable.
Your next item on behalf of Washington Irving is a watercolor painting of his meeting, Washington Irving's meeting, with George Washington in 1789. Tell us about it.
It seems like it was something profoundly important to Washington Irving. You know, in the research and in the reading that I've done about him, only one watercolor. It's not that he was like, he did this as a hobby and he has this whole array of watercolors.
Sure.
You know, it's like there's this one and it's him meeting George Washington when he's six and George Washington gives him his blessing. So I think it was really important to him. And I think it was a keepsake that he might want to bring with him. And, you know, for a lot of the reasons we talked about, love of America and patriotism and the honor of meeting George Washington. And it's kind of cliche. A lot of people say, you know, or ask, you know, who's your favorite president? Who's the greatest president of all time? But George Washington really was unbelievable. He was the only president unanimously elected by the Electoral College. And that happened twice. That has never happened any other time in history. He led the United States through the American Revolution, led us through the Constitutional Convention, where we wrote our Constitution. And incredibly, he did something that is rare in leadership in the world. He voluntarily gave up what could have been total power. You know, he could have been King George I of the United States of America. People would have supported him in that, almost certainly. And he said, no. And that's weird. That's a weird, weird thing in history. And so I think Washington Irving might have wanted to remember that. You know, I'm interested also in why watercolor? And I was actually talking to our art teacher at school, and he was saying, at the time, acrylic painting had not yet been invented. The convenience of acrylic, you know, plastic tube and squirted out. Oil painting, there's a bit of a technique and there's many chemicals that go into it that you have to mix together. It can take weeks to dry, oil painting. Watercolor, it's kind of cheap. Anyone can get a hold of these cakes, these pucks or whatever of color. You add a little bit of water, wham, bam, 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 you got a painting. You do a little drawing first, color it in. But I thought, you know, why would he choose watercolor? And I think it was just an accessible, easier way to paint at that time. And we talked about a lot of the other things that we talked about, you know, the juxtaposition of life after the Revolution. You know, George Washington is born British and then becomes American. And that's something that Washington Irving, an issue and a theme that he seems to have talked about in his literature.
The official magazine called Britain.
Yes, I get so excited when it comes in the mail.
So tell me about this. How long have you been getting this? How long have you been subscribed? And what does this magazine give you and what does it do for you?
Well, I've only been getting it for a couple of years. We were fortunate enough to make my dream journey 3 years ago to England that I had been saving up my entire life, it seems, for. We went for 3 weeks. And, you know, when you dream about a trip like that, you worry, is it going to be as good as I think it will be? Mm-hmm, yeah. It was better.
Wow.
So where did you go?
Oh, We traveled to my ancestral haunts. So we went into London.
Haunts, yes.
Well, it's not truly haunted. But we went to a little bit northeast of London. We went to Finching Field.
Finching Field.
Doesn't that sound pretty?
I've heard of Finchley, but I've never heard of Finching Field.
Oh, it's such... It was voted one of the most beautiful villages in England.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
But that's where our ancestor Daniel Shedd came from in 1642.
Right.
Yes, and ended up in Quincy, Massachusetts. But we went there. The church that he was baptized in was there. We saw the baptismal fount where he was baptized. We went up into the belfry. They rang the bell. I was able to ring the bell.
Wow.
And they just really treated us so well when we were there.
That's fantastic. Yeah. So where else did you go?
We went to several other areas. And then I'm a big Jane Austen fan.
Right.
So we went to Bath. It was funny. When we were there.
Lovely. Bath's nice.
Yes. We were pronouncing it Bath. You know, like we would in this country. And
that's
we were corrected by a very lovely English lady. She said, I find you will... pronounce it Bath. So we tried to say
shut up.
Bath. Oh, she was very nice. Her name was Bath, Angela okay, Harbottle. Bath. I mean, you
Harbottle.
Can't. Yes, I love it.
What a pleasantly
oh, it was.
Appropriate name.
Oh, she was fantastic.
She fights a hard battle every day. Yeah.
So we went there. We went to Winchester, where she is buried.
Right.
We went to Chawton, where her home was, where she wrote my favorite novel, Pride and Prejudice. I was actually there and saw her writing desk. I just felt like somebody had to pinch me. I couldn't believe I was there.
That's fantastic. Did you get any of the baths at Bath?
No, we went through. Right. And where we met somebody else from New York State, believe it or not. Yeah, we enjoyed that very much. We did a lot of walking. Every community we went to, they have a footpath. They are very big into walking and preserving their nature, which I love too. We walked so many woodland paths that...
Rambling,
yes. And they have swans. I couldn't believe it. Swans in the creeks.
Do you know what the most... the most popular name of a bar is in England?
I don't know.
Is it named after a king?
No. I'll give you a clue, giving you an animal lover. It's named after an animal.
Oh, boar?
Nope.
Or?
Loon.
The Red Lion.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bird?
I said it's named after an animal.
An animal.
Oh, okay. I thought bird. Why did I think
no,
bird?
No, I do like birds.
I was looking at my notes.
I said
we're coming up to birds soon.
No, the Red Lion. That's the most popular name of a bar in England, apparently.
Okay.
Now, given that you have this love of England, all things British, I'm going to ask you some questions. I'm going to ask you some trivia, actually.
Oh, boy.
Just to see if any of this stuff has been in your magazines and if you know any of it. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So. London has one of the oldest transport systems in the world and also one of the largest. Now, how many underground stations does the London Underground have? To the nearest, say, 5.
20. To the nearest 5?
I say 20.
No, how many stations in the London Underground system?
Well, we went to at least 5. I would say probably 40.
40?
40 to 50.
I'm 20.
270 functioning stations.
Well, that has to be in the suburbs.
You see, growing up in Buffalo, I took the subway in Buffalo and there's like 10 or something. Like there was a single line. So that's my, even Toronto.
Yeah, I know. Huh. I know.
I don't think Toronto has.
But London's is a bit size is bigger than
huge.
New York's.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. We'll have to go back.
George, my friend George, he used to manage one of the most populous stations in London, Camden Town. He used to be a manager there.
Mm.
He used to tell me all the stories, you know. So now, the largest library in the world is the British Library in King's Cross, right? How many items do you think is in its catalogue?
A million.
A million?
200 million.
Mike's closest, but he's over.
Are you serious? Oh,
170 million items
oh my
in its catalogue. So there you are.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, There you go.
That's pretty amazing. That's
a little bit of British trivia. Did you try any foods? Did you try fish and chips?
Oh, we had the best food when we were there. I'm a vegetarian, so no, right. I didn't eat the fish and chips.
No jelly deals?
My husband did.
Jelly deals? No.
What is that?
It's eels.
Oh, no. Jellied. No, I wouldn't. Either way.
Pie and mash?
No, but we had the best food. We didn't have a bad meal. The only thing about it is my husband did not get a good coffee the entire time he was there.
Oh, is he a coffee snob?
No, they just don't make coffee like they do in this country.
Yeah, you're right.
They drink tea.
Yeah, tea. Yeah. Tea's for everything. You know, if there's been a catastrophe in the house, you know, the person will say, seriously?
Would you like a cuppa?
Let's get the kettle on and we'll talk about it.
Now, your next item, Amanda Marie, is a journal with colored pens.
Yes.
So tell us about your journaling and why colored pens?
I really like to color coordinate everything in my life. and so journaling is the same thing. Different colors mean different things to me.
What does red mean?
Red is usually a very intense color. Sometimes angry. Yeah. Yep.
Hopefully she doesn't refer to this experience with a red pen.
What about blue?
Blue is just kind of tranquil and calming.
Good.
Yep.
Okay.
My preferred colors are orange and purple. I like to write in those two colors mostly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But journaling in general.
Do colors mean emotion for you then?
I think so. For the most part, when I'm journaling about something personal or something like that, yes. I also use it different colors for different clients at work too. So sometimes when I'm writing with a certain color, I think of a certain person and I have to change the color or I enjoy the color more. It just kind of depends on the day.
Yeah. Hmm. Cool.
So if you're thinking of somebody you don't like and if I'm sitting with you and I'm your client and you're using a red pen, is that a bad bad sign?
It might be, because usually at work I just use red for like due dates and reports. So that's usually not a good thing.
Right.
Have you ever written any like sort of fictional stuff in your journals?
Not since I was probably a teenager. I used to like to do short stories and stuff. My foster daughter really likes to write short stories, and sometimes we'll sit down and she'll be like, hey, Mom, can we just like write stories for a little while? Like, yeah, we can do that. So I've done that a little bit in the last year, but not as much as I used to when I was in high school.
What kind of stuff would you write about?
Back then, usually it would spring off of like an assignment or something we had where we had to write something and be like, well, this is what I'm turning in, but maybe I'll make it a little bit different just for fun. So whether it was something that was like, oh, write a suspenseful story or write something that has a happy ending or something moving, you know, it just kind of would depend on what the prompt was.
You know, I found that I tried to write a short story once and I felt that I'd been so immersed at the time I was trying to write it. I'd been so immersed in academic writing that I felt that I couldn't free flow with the writing.
Yeah.
To write a short story, and I was getting a bit frustrated by it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe I needed to change my mindset and my approach, and I just put the pen down and didn't go back to it.
Yeah.
Mm. Weird.
Yeah.
But you like writing, Mike, don't you?
I'm trying to get into it a little bit more now. I have some ideas for things that I'd like to write about, but it's hard. You know, it's not something that comes naturally to me. And I was talking to a colleague, you know, Mark and Berwick. We had him on the show actually recently for the Redux.
Yeah.
And he was saying that Mark Twain put down Huck Finn, I think, he said something like 7 years and then came back to it and finished it. So even if it takes a long time, trying to just keep at it.
Well, keep at it.
Yeah.
Write your big novel, you know?
Yeah.
I'm just an audiophile. And I love music, all types of different music, especially as I get older. I think I'm starting to listen to a broader range of things. And I never really...
You're old.
I never really listen to the radio, not because I don't want to, just because I'm always listening. Like Rammstein just dropped a new album.
No, I didn't.
That's what I'm listening to now, and I'm alternating between that and a band out of the UK called The Heavy, one of their albums. So I'm just flip flopping between them lately. But once in a while, I'll jump in my wife's car, and she's a big public radio fan, and I just leave it on. I don't want to change her stations. It's what is that, Foxy Brown? Don't touch my levels now. I have them set right where I want them. But I catch so many great news, I can't say articles, stories. The one that I just recently caught on was about a woman trying to figure out early detection signs for Alzheimer's.
All right.
And I was sucked in, and now I have this cool new information that I need to dig into a little bit more because my attention span's not the best, so I don't retain things very easily. But you know, things like that. When I, I keep saying I made a supercut last time I was on the show. I made a supercut of how many times I said, it lasted for a minute and a half.
Nice.
And I swear to you, all I did was just cut out the you knows and put it and just push them together. So the beginning was me just trying to be, there it is again, eloquent. And then all of a sudden it just was, I wish I brought the clip. I could have played it for you.
There's times when we are editing a show, and because we're trying to edit something particular, you're listening to the same verbiage over and over for like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
So you maybe hear, and it comes in halfway through what we're saying. So it might be me going, and you kind of get over yourself pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's very
humbling.
Very humbling.
Very.
I do know.
We have one more song. This is Farewell by Reggie Wilcox and a number of other songs played by Reggie Wilcox on his piano.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to hear this. Reggie, fantastic.
Those are some of our favourite moments from last year. Both of us are looking forward to 2020 and the fun that we will have getting to know our future guests that little bit better. We would like to thank you for listening throughout the past year, and to end the show, we would like to reflect on some of our guests' responses to our trademark question.
How do you take your coffee?
I don't remember what I said last time. I really don't. I'm kind of all over the place. It depends on how I feel. But if I'm at home, I do milk, 2 sugars. If I'm at the cup, I usually just do black.
With lots of cream and sugar. I'm the person who will drink your coffee if you've accidentally put too much creamer in it.
Cream and no sugar.
I don't. I am not a coffee drinker.
I don't drink coffee.
Washington, how do you take your coffee?
Well, Like many of my contemporaries, I like nothing more than sitting around a table with a large pot of coffee at my side that I can drink periodically. Putting milk in it, or sugar, would be blasphemous.